At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Now, the Olympic Games finally got underway yesterday evening, with thousands of people, including athletes, travelling down the Seine River on hundreds of custom-made floats. I don't know, were you watching it yourselves? I'm not usually the kind of person who likes to sit down and watch sort of parades and ceremonies and that kind of thing. I nearly didn't when the commentary team said, settle in for the next 4 hours. And I was thinking, I could actually go to the airport and fly to Paris in less than 4 hours. I'm not sure I have it in me. But actually, I sat there with my wife, Karina, and we watched the whole thing from start to finish. Now, there were generally seemed to be mixed reactions to it, because we did a quick straw poll around the office very early this morning here in News Talk, about five people. And it did reveal, though, that people had differing opinions. And I think that kind of reflected what was happening online last night while it was on, as everyone was second screening. But I was thinking, you know, a parade with terrible weather, as Irish people, we should have embraced it fully. I mean, this is what we're used to. I think the nation was secretly delighted when we saw the torrential downpours, because we were like, finally, some other country knows what it likes to wave a tiny flag, knows what it feels like to wave a tiny flag in driving rain, and then have to spend the rest of the following week saying, great day, pity about the weather. But there were many tiny flags on show. The ceremony actually reminded me, it was like an extended version of those Eurovision VTs you see, you know, where genetically blessed foreigners smile manically at the camera. There was a lot of that going on. And I think if you were into the Eurovision, you probably would have liked it. If you didn't see it, basically the athletes went down the river on a load of boats, too many, some might say. And there seemed to be a great party atmosphere on board, though. Everybody seemed to be having a good time. I would imagine if you had a wedding on an Arran Island ferry, it kind of looked like that. Zinedine Zidane, the famous French footballer, of course, made an appearance. He seems to be basically the Marty Morrissey of France, beloved by all and dragged out for every major sporting event. And then along the River Seine, we were treated to different performances. Lady Gaga was the first, as she came down a specially built gold staircase with giant pink pom-poms and delivered, as always, managing to navigate wet cobbles in high heels. I think she should have got a special gold medal for that, in fairness to her. I mean, Lady Gaga seems to be, she's just the ultimate safe pair of hands, isn't she, for these kinds of things? She's the Packy Bonner for global ceremonies. Oscars, Super Bowls, Olympics, she does it all. There were Can-Can girls doing their high kicks along the riverbank, famous from the Moulin Rouge, of course. The kicks weren't really in sync, if I'm going to be picky about it. Perhaps my wife and I were just being too critical, because we have been watching that Netflix show about the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. They run a very tight ship and they would not have stood for those out of sync high kicks from the Can-Can girls along the side. The heavy metal band Gojira, I was very impressed with them. They were hanging out the windows of the palace along the river, and I thought that was particularly cool, followed directly by some opera, and they just seemed to blend seamlessly. And of course, seeing Celine Dion singing halfway up the Eiffel Tower was a special moment. And I think anyone who has watched her documentary about having that awful stiff person syndrome and losing her voice would have been very happy to see Celine singing her heart out and having her voice back, you know, because she is so iconic. So that was very cool. The Irish uniforms on the athletes were divisive, judging by the reaction online last night. I felt they were kind of like the opening ceremony itself. Ambitious, but parts of it didn't work. You know, the outfits, they kind of reminded me of when my sister used to dress me up for Halloween, and she used a white blouse and a load of toilet paper. I think I may have been a mummy. The driving rain didn't help the look, I'm sure. It didn't help any of the outfits. And fair play to all the performers for dancing their hearts out on super slippery surfaces. I actually found myself watching parts of it last night, like a parent watches someone else's child climb up on a stool. you know, that you're thinking, oh, Jesus, they're going to fall. That's how I spent most of the ceremony. One lad was walking along a catwalk on his tippy toes in ballet shoes, and my wife and I nearly had to leave the room. We were so worried about him. There was a silver horse that flew down the river. There were minions, loads of sports people I didn't recognise, and clearly neither did the TV commentators, so they went noticeably quiet at times. There was sprinting legend Carl Lewis looking confused and uncomfortable on a boat, like an Irish person walking into a squally shower at a funeral. Serena Williams, Rafa Nadal, more Zinedine Zidane. And then a big balloon went into the air and we all wondered, was it over? And then it was. But a man who was there himself in person off the balls, Gerard Gilroy, is in Paris. He is joining me now and he was there to soak it all in. Soak being the operative word. Hello, Ger.
Hey, Dermot, how are you? Soak, definitely.
Yeah. Did you get the loan of an official Olympics poncho? Or were you there just wearing an Irish anorak?
I had the Irish anorak and then they came out and they distributed ponchos to everybody, fully cognizant of the fact that there was a lot of sitting around to be done waiting for everything to arrive. It's funny, I've been looking at the French papers this morning and they've been looking at the global press in much the same way that we were like trawling the Twitters at the weekend when the Ireland final, hurling final was on BBC. Mm. What do they really think of it? And they have selectively picked out the positive reviews, but apparently Kelly Clarkson was in tears in the NBC studio when she saw Celine Dion. I think people crying at Celine Dion seems to have been universal all across the world. So the French are definitely waking up this morning feeling pretty good about life, almost irrespective of the weather.
Well, you have to hand it to them. You know, yes, there were parts of it that maybe seemed a little bit clunky or strange, but it was so ambitious. I mean, it definitely is easier to do these in the contained environment of a stadium, particularly if you can close the roof and keep the rain out. But yeah, they really went for it. And I thought, myself and my wife were thinking, you know, Paris and France looked seriously cool. But I guess not everybody thought that.
Even in the rain, when you consider just... start of it was slow and, as you say, clunky, but you'd have to say that it built to a crescendo, which was fairly phenomenal. That last hour when they got rid of the business of actually having... So the whole point of this is to introduce the athletes, right? We should just go back to the opening ceremonies. The point of this is to give the athletes a glimpse of, in original times, the stadium and have a crowd and go, these are the people who are going to be representing all of the countries that are taking part in the 32 sports over the next 2.5 weeks. And then it slowly morphed. I mean, you got to think back, I suppose. Muhammad Ali was involved in Atlanta, and that was this big moment for everybody going, oh, okay, so here's a hero who's making peace with the Olympic movement. Celine Dion actually sang in Atlanta in 96. And then Danny Boyle in 2012 took the whole thing to an entire new level by telling a story. Mm. And if you consider... like France seemed to have put a philosopher and the bang of Cirque du Soleil on steroids, appropriately, for the Olympics off it. And I did think that, like, for the first hour, you're kind of going, they have the difficulty here of integrating the athletes into this. And they had that weird parkour thing going on. But once they dropped that and once the white horse arrived, I thought that the final bits of dancing and the singing and the sparkling of the celebrity sports people, like Rafa Nadal getting the torch off Zinedine Zidane, you're like, this is pretty cool, in front of the world's leaders. And it's not very often that you can mix Gaga, Zidane, Marie-José Perec, and no, everybody's like, yeah, this makes sense, and Celine Dion. I'm like, yeah, that's a triumphant moment for the world.
What was
how I thought at the end.
What was it like to actually watch it in person? Because, you know, I guess we can compare it to a Paddy's Day parade, and it's one thing looking at it on telly and you get lovely close-ups of the interesting things, but what's it like to sit in a small grandstand or, you know, perched on the edge of the river watching the boats go by? You know, do you get that feeling that you do on Paddy's Day as, you know, the 15th vintage tractor rolls by and you say, come on, we'll go for a pint, will we?
You get a little bit of that because the way that it's set up is that nobody gets to see that much of anything. So, you know, the way the Imagine was sung at a bridge, like the only people who could see that were the people who were on the side of the river at that point, and everything else was big screen. So I think what they really did, it's like going to a golf tournament. It's actually quite superior experience to be watching it. And so the big screens at the grandstands and the final grandstand where Macron and Thomas Bach were, and where all those quite long speeches at the end, unnecessarily long, you'd have to say. Fair play to Macron, I said one sentence and got out of the way.
Yeah, there was a touch about the golf club speech. It was sort of Mr. Captain, Lady Captain, Mr. President, thanks very much. There's something about speeches, whether it's a wedding, you know, a golf club, an Olympic ceremony, you just want them to be over so you can get on with the action.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I was looking mostly at the elite umbrella holding of the woman in the background who did not flinch.
Well, her hand, the poor woman's arm was shaking and you could see her breathing like, just keep it together.
I thought there was side eye going, hang on a second, you're finished now, right? You're definitely finished. Yeah. And then he was talking in a different language and she was like, oh my God. But that was very good. The point I was making at the end, that was very contained and that was kind of perpendicular to the Eiffel Tower. So you actually we didn't see any of the river stuff at all that happened at the end, the grandstand. So like it was definitely made for TV and it should be because 22 million French people watched it last night. And you got to remember too that the pressure that France is under given their recent election results and everything that's happened in the country and the amount of money that they spent on this and the fact that they don't have a functioning parliament, a lot of pressure on. And I would, one thing I think we should definitely call out, if you are a young trans person in the deep south of America and you're watching the representation that you saw on TV last night in the Olympics, you're feeling much better about life knowing that there are people out there who have your back. And I'd say if you're a young gay person in the Middle East watching this, you're going, actually, you know what, maybe the Olympics is for me. I think the representation of diversity was something that they really went for and they weren't afraid of controversy because you can see how somebody would come in and edit all that stuff out and go, oh, sorry, the Chinese audience aren't going to like this, so you can't have it. Just went for it. And you've got to say fair play. Like to your point, right, not everybody's going to like every aspect of it. But I'd say most people, after the bewilderment passed, you're like, actually, you know what? That light show is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was ambitious and it was inclusive and it was very colourful. And I think it'll be remembered for all the right reasons, as you say. Well, look, let's drill down into a little bit of the sporting aspects of it, because as you said at the top, that's exactly what it's about. It's about these athletes. And one thing I noticed and really appreciated, and I didn't really appreciate it until I saw it on television, because I'm not an Olympic expert and I don't think many of us are. We kind of have a passing interest in it and we want to catch the interesting moments. But one thing that was clear when the boats were going by with the various representations of athletes from around the world, to say that, you know, so with some countries, many countries who had less than 10 athletes at the Games. And here's Ireland again, punching above our weight, 133 athletes, not all of them on the little boat, mind, but you know, for us to be bringing this many athletes to the Olympics is an incredible achievement. And we saw it there when you're put in comparison with countries of a larger size who just don't have that representation.
Yeah, I think so. America had 630 or 650. And, you know, quick maths, they're not just four times bigger than us. They're way bigger than us. And so in olden times when Pat Hickey was in charge, Colin Ireland's just written a great book. His sister, Gina, was our best tennis player. And in 1992, Pat Hickey said, no tourists, and wouldn't let her go to play tennis in Barcelona. And if you think about the impact that having an Olympian come back and teach at her local club and just be in the environment, it kind of builds this sport family and it builds this potential for people to think about, I could have ambition to do this thing. And I'm always a bit wary, like, you know, you can't just say that that's the only reason to send people. But there's going to be 133 people who come back from this Olympic Games and are entitled to go to their local tattooist and get the five rings or get a signet ring that has and put OLY behind their name. And, you know, it can't but have a positive impact on their local sports community. And if that's all it does, great. But we have a really good, strong team. And I think this is as a result of significant investment in Sports Campus Ireland, which is out in Abbottstown, and the high performance unit out there is all perfectly coordinated by Sport Ireland. And so they're in the background here. And then the Olympic Federation has obviously really come on in leaps and bounds in recent years, you know, under the leadership of Peter Sherrod in particular there. You can see what happens when you get good administrators in charge of something. Everybody's aligned. Everybody has a clear idea of what they're trying to do. And suddenly standards rise across the board. So we're strong in five or six sports, really. But then in other sports, we're getting people who are going to set new personal bests and raise the standard in the country. So the next group who come through will be even better than them. And that's the bit about the momentum that Irish sport has at the moment, that irrespective of whether or not we get 3 medals or 10 medals, that's the truth in sending these numbers here.
Well, let's drill down into some medals. Ireland's best medal haul, 6 in total, came at London in 2012, of course. 133 competitors is a lot to keep track of. So can you give us our biggest medal hopes and when they're going to be on and when we can see them and who we should be looking out for? I mean, why don't we start with Rhys McGlennon, because, you know, he's still only 25. He's got a sparkling CV. When can we see him and just how realistic are his hopes?
Well, Rhys has put himself under a lot of pressure. Recent documentary on TV where he was talking about he's thinking every day about winning gold in Paris. So you just hope that he performs to the level that he's capable of, because if he does, then he'll definitely get a medal. The way that the pommel horse works is that you basically tell them how difficult your routine is going to be. And then if you do the routine at that level of difficulty, you get extra points for it. And he always reaches for the stars. And I presume people remember, but maybe they don't. In Tokyo, he fell off the horse, and it was a personal disaster in terms of sport for him, but he's bounced back incredibly well. And so he comes in as one of the gold medal favourites, having had recent success at basically everything he's been at since. So he's in action tonight, and it's the qualifier. We expect him to breeze through the qualifier, but I guess for him, there will be some demons from Tokyo 3 years ago. And I think he's a very, very realistic medal hope. And if you're talking about other medal hopes, then it's time to tune into the swimming pool, because Daniel Whiffen is somebody who, again, has put pressure on himself by saying, yeah, I'm definitely going to win gold. I don't know which event. He's definitely going to do 2 events in the pool, 800 metres and 1500 metres. And then they have this open water swim, which is 10K, which he's never done, which is going to happen at the final weekend of the tournament. So Whiffen could basically pick up a medal a week for the 3 weeks of the tournament. So look, they're the kind of two, and then you've got the boxers, and any one of the boxers could go on a run. Obviously, Kelly Harrington is the defending champion, and so again, she would put herself under pressure that a similar level would be something that she expects. I think the competition is even more fierce this time than it was in Tokyo. And then, of course, the rowers. If talking to somebody with knowledge of this, they were saying you'll know very soon if the rowers are all performing consistently, then they're going to be in the medal shakeup. And if the boxers arrive, and the first boxers are in action today and tomorrow, if the boxers arrive and they're all fighting to the standard that we think they're capable of, then we're going to win medals, because we have some of the best boxers in the world, particularly in the women. I think we're the only country who qualified a woman in every single of one of the weight categories. So, and you know, they're the sports that it really matters for. Like, sorry, one last thing on this. Shane Lowry was obviously our flag bearer, and I got the chance to interview him yesterday about it, and he was absolutely delighted to be there. And it was a real kind of reset on the is despair the right word that he felt after the Open, because, you know, he really feels like that was an Open that he could have won, and it was. So to have something completely different, to be on a boat yesterday where LeBron James and Coco Gauff are two behind, and you're looking over and there's Lady Gaga performing, I think was just taking him out of his daily routine. And this the course that they're playing on is a really important course for him, because it was the one that he won his first ever professional check. Obviously, he won the Irish Open, but he couldn't take the check because he was an amateur, and then had 3 or 4 missed cuts, really badly missed cuts. But his first ever professional check, made a cut at Le Golf National of Paris, and so loves it there, has kind of good memories of it, and be a good story for him to keep the medal.
Yeah, it was great. And you say it's true what you say about the boxers as well. I actually met Bernard Dunn in the queue for popcorn at the cinema during the week. We had a brief chat about the boxing, and he seemed very confident, and not in a showy way. You know, Bernard's a realist, and he was definitely very confident. And of course, we've got Rashid Adeleke in there as well, who's always so exciting to watch. Ger, enjoy it. We've got to leave it there. I hope you're getting some of the perks that go with these kinds of trips, and it's not all work, is it, Ger?
Of course, all work and no play. Paris is such a great city, Dermot. Like they've made it so sprawling. All the events are all over the place. So you turn around the corner and it's like, oh, it's one of the world's great monuments. So Yeah, and that's brilliant.
I know. Yeah, it's fantastic. Jared, thanks so much for chatting to us. There we go. That's Jared Gilroy there from Off the Ball, of course. And you're going to get every ounce of coverage on Off the Ball and News Talk over the coming weeks.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.